What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful in those things. And we'll probably talk about some real estate stuff, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can lose our identities and struggle at times. This is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through these things, this is the show for you. First, before we get started, just wanted to do a shout out to our friends at NeuroGum, keeping us caffeinated, focused during the show. NeuroGum is a chewing gum with nootropics, B vitamins, L-theanine, and a little bit of caffeine. I chew it, you know, kind of throughout the day. I like it before my workouts.
I'm on my third piece today.
I took it before my workout this morning. I mean, I'm chewing it now. I love this stuff. So big fan of NeuroGum, and Kent, the owner, sent us a bunch of it, and we're using it and giving it out to our guests and our friends. So if you ever want to try it, hit me up or Pat up or Murph.
Yep.
We'll get you some.
It's good for vegans, or if you're trying to go gluten free, it's got sugar free and aspartame free. So yeah, it's like a half a cup of coffee. So later in the day, if you're one of those people like me who if I drink a cup of coffee afternoon, I'm going to be wide awake all night. This is perfect.
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 Yeah. And we are doing the book club again this month. This month for March, we're doing Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. It's a classic. So get the book, read it along with us. We're going to do a podcast on it at the end of March. So. Anywho, now that we got the housekeeping stuff out of the way, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
Doing good. It's been a good week. Good. You know, I've actually started tracking my macros again, so I'm kind of getting dialed in. I'm seeing you. It's inspiring me to be better about my shit. So I'm paying attention to my diet, tracking my stuff. I don't really have like any specific goals. Like, I'm not like trying to like lose weight or anything right now, or gain weight, or I just want to
be more aware.
Just be more aware where I'm at, and make sure I'm getting enough protein, and you know, drinking my water, and you know, getting my macros like in a good spot. You know, right. I'm not exactly so worried. You know, I don't even really know what my goals are right now as far as the macro. I mean, I know where I have them in the app, and I mean, I'm not like, this isn't like the law for me right now. I'm just kind of tracking them, seeing where they go, making sure you know that I'm not getting too crazy. So that's been something new for me in the last week. Also had been a little bit of a tougher week. I've taken on, last couple of weeks I've signed like 4 listings, which has been great. But also had a couple, you know, I guess you could call them losses. You could call them, I don't know what you could call them, but, you and I were talking on the phone yesterday about this, but, I had one client I'd been showing houses to for these people almost 2 years, and, they ended up finding an off market deal through a friend, and they didn't want to have any agents involved. So, they bought it for them. And honestly, I'm happy for them. That's the best case scenario for them. And they, you know, get to buy the house a little bit cheaper, so they're not paying out agents. And, so that was cool. Just a bummer that I probably spent a lot of time with them showing them houses over the last 2 years. So, you know, I was bummed I didn't get that sale, but I do get to list their current house, which we're getting that on the market this coming week, and that one's going to be a really good listing. So I'm really excited about that. So I had that happen, and then yesterday found out I had another listing kind of lined up, and found out that they're kind of doing something similar. They're selling it to a friend who's also one of my clients, and they're kind of doing that off market, which is totally cool. It's best deal for them. It's actually an FHA loan, so they're able to assume that. So that's something out there for you guys. If you know somebody that has an FHA loan or a VA loan, right?
Yeah. Or USDA.
Those can actually be assumed. So these folks actually bought this house with me in 2020, and they have like a 3% interest rate on this house. And so basically they're paying, and then the buyer is going to pay the difference on what it's worth today versus the loan balance. And he's just assuming their loan. So he gets to buy a house with a 3% interest rate, which doesn't exist today. And so it's great for him. But, you know, again, on my end, it's kind of a bummer because I thought I was going to get the listing there and also thought I was going to get the sale. of the other guy, of the buyer. But on the positive note, I do get to, that buyer has a very, very beautiful, nice house. It'll actually be my biggest listing ever. I'm going to be listing his house within the next month, probably. So I'm very excited about that, but a little bit of a bummer. And, you know, like we were talking about yesterday, this was a, like a, it was a big step for me because, you know, like if this would have happened to me 2 or 3 years ago, bro, it would have wrecked me. Would have been so sad. I mean, cause that between those, that was over $20,000 worth of commission or income that I, you know, thought I kind of had in, mm-hmm. in the distance. And now that's just kind of goes away. And man, if that would have happened to me 2 years ago, I would have been a pouty little sad panda for like 2 weeks and been really pissed off and upset. And like, I would have totally let it, I know it would have let it affect other aspects of my life, but you know, I'm just focusing on, and, but not like today, yes, I heard about it. I was bummed. I was like, damn, it sucks. But hey, I'm super happy because it is the best situation for my clients. And these are all these people I consider my friends too. So like,
right.
Man, like if I was in their shoes, I would have done the same fucking thing. Like yeah. why pay me for, if you got something set up, why pay someone else? So it's, I'm totally cool with it. And I'm really, really happy for them that they were able to work this out and able to get everything figured out. And I'm going to be there if they need anything. So, you know, just a big like step for me. Like I said, man, I used to just let that shit bother me for a long time and it really like eat me up inside. And it used to just translate into other aspects of my life. And yeah. And I would get on this, like, oh, everything's fucking falling apart, you know? And then other things would start falling apart. Cause I'd be all sad and focused on that. So that's something for me that's been huge. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, it just goes to show the growth that you have. But that abundance mentality that we've talked about
100%
multiple times on the show. I mean, knowing that, you know, yeah, it sucks. But like you said, being a professional at what you do, you know that this is what's best for them, whether you're getting paid for it or not. Yeah, that sucks that it happened. But ultimately, it's best for them. And you've got that abundance mentality that, hey, you know what? It's not going to make or break me.
Yeah,
and that's huge.
No, yeah, exactly. Because I know that there's going to be more deals. I know that every single one of the people that I just referred to, whether it was the people from the first deal or the two folks from the second deal, like I know that if any of them hear of any of their friends that were thinking about buy, selling or investing in real estate in St. Louis, that 100% they'd be throwing my name at them. And that's all that really matters. Cause it's, the growth of my business that long-term, you know, that's right. Way more important to me than one sale this year,
right?
You know, because I plan on doing this for a long time,
right? And I had that client, I had that call, because you referred the buyer to you, to me.
Yeah.
And I had that conversation with them, and you know, I don't ever really count them as clients until I actually have a full application and I'm starting to work numbers for them. But him and I sat down, we had about a 25-30 minute phone call about it, and you know, he was asking me these questions and he was like, well, do I really want to assume this, even though the rate's low, it's got PMI on it. I'm like, dude, like what you'd be paying extra in interest if you were to just buy this outright right now.
Yeah.
That's not
that PMI.
Take the PMI. It's who cares?
Well, wouldn't with the PMI with.
Not with FHA.
Oh,
got it's on there for the life.
It's on there for life. Ah,
yeah. Okay. So that's right.
Yeah, dude. Yeah,
but
you're not going to get that 3% rate.
And even with the extra that you're paying in PMI, you would have been paying twice as much that would, I mean, more,
mm-hmm.
about high sixes, low 7%
mm-hmm.
interest rate. So yeah, take the little extra payment you're paying towards PMI and think of it as, hey, I'm paying a little extra in interest. So, yeah. You know, it is what it is.
So it works out way better than it would if you
absolutely.
Were to buy it.
So no, I mean, it sucks, but it's part of it. And like I said, the best that we could do is give them the best advice to help them move forward. And so that they're successful at what they're trying to do with it.
100%, so, dude. I couldn't agree more. So that's been something this week. Oh, we started on the family side of things. Calvin started swim lessons, so that was pretty cool. We had our first swim lessons on Monday. He fucking loved it.
Did he?
Dude, only kid in the class that didn't cry and did every exercise. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. I look so out of place.
Atta boy.
I look so out of place there, by the way. Like, it's like me and like all these like, you know, like middle-aged women. And I'm just in here with like tattoos and like, it's, like, I just feel like I look out of, Gina's like, you just look out of place in there. It's just funny. Yeah. It was just, it was cool though. Yeah,
potential another networking process, dude, or place.
God, yeah. You're thinking exactly.
What yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You never know.
Never know.
Never know who you're going to meet. You know,
don't sell them, but sell them on what you do. And then maybe they know people.
100%.
Yeah.
Dude, that is, that was... It's so funny. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, oh, here's
every
some people. I mean,
every yeah. opportunity. Like, I'm excited to get these boys into sports. You know?
Hell
like,
yeah, dude.
I took the boys a couple weekends ago. Our neighbor's son plays, pretty competitive hockey. And the Blues started this thing called the Blue Note Cup. So, like, when I played, we didn't have it. You just played your season. Whoever had the best record at the end won. But this is a tournament of everybody in that, so you get seated, and basically, you know, you could have finished dead last, but you still have a chance to win the Blue Note Cup. Like, or you could have started really slow, but you came on at the end and all this. But it's really cool to watch. And like, I'm at a 12-year-old hockey game, and there's hundreds of people there. Hundreds. It was awesome. Like, these kids will, like,
they're gonna remember that for the rest of their lives. Yeah.
Forever. And so, yeah, that was fun to get there. I'm like, fuck, I want to get the kids into this. This is awesome. You know, they've been asking to get into hockey. And I mean, I played hockey growing up, and, you know, thinking back, like, yeah, we're doing this. T-ball's coming up next, which,
yep. Oh yeah.
I never played baseball, guys. Don't ask me to coach. I don't have the patience for that.
No.
So, I mean, I work with the boys outside on my own. And my oldest is very good. So that'll be interesting to see how he takes to T-ball, because I'm already throwing to him and he's hitting live pitching.
Mm.
So it'll be interesting to slow it down and put it on a tee.
Put it on a tee and just cranks it.
Dude. Yeah, he loves it. So get him signed up. Oliver, he's a work in progress with baseball. I don't think he doesn't
be a wrestler, dude.
Yeah, he doesn't. he's not a baseball guy. Like he's, which is fine. I'm never going to push my kids in baseball, even though I played at almost the highest possible level you could play at. I will never push my kids into baseball. If they're not interested, I'm going to put them in what they're interested in.
Right.
Oliver likes to hit people. So, you
good
know,
good job, buddy.
Yeah. You know, I can't wait to get him to where he's old enough to where I can get him into like jujitsu or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
In football, wrestling, and hockey, wrestling, all of this stuff, because that's what he likes.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of all the stuff that I liked. I mean, I played all the soccer, baseball, you know, soccer, or I already said soccer, basketball, baseball. You know, I played all the CYC sports, you know, and I was never good at any of them because I didn't really like any of them. I just did it because all my friends did it.
Yeah.
And, but then when I finally got into, I was always wanted to play football because I was like, I wanted to hit people,
yeah,
you know, and then I always wanted to wrestle. And it's just because my big cousin, he wrestled, and I like always really looked up to him. And that's why I was super interested in wrestling. And I remember my freshman year of high school, like all my best friends from grade school, because I hung out with all my grade school friends, and I still do more than like any of my high school friends. And like everybody wrestled, or like it seems like most of my friends that freshman year, like they at least wrestled. And I just remember them like us messing around in basements and them like putting me, like pinning me and me not being able to get up. Or like taking me down, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I was like, oh, how to do that.
Yeah. Scariest fucking thing ever.
Yeah, dude. And then from then on, I was like obsessed with wrestling. And then, you know, that turned into jiu-jitsu just because I mean, I think wrestling is a great base for anybody. And it's a great thing for any like young kid to learn. Like I learned so much about myself and so much about like the world through wrestling because it's so fucking hard. And it's only you. And that's like the big difference between like that and any other sport I had played previously. And
did you like look up to wrestlers when you were active in like your school programs? Like, I mean, I'm not the foremost aficionado on like wrestling history or culture, but you know, you could talk about like Chael Sonnen, for example, like great wrestler. You could talk about Tyron Woodley, great Western wrestler, but like, it's a different kind of thing. Like, was there anyone you looked up to specifically?
Not really. I remember watching MMA for the first time. I remember it was Chuck Liddell and
Tito.
I think that was literally the first fight I ever watched. And it was like right around eighth grade or so. And I remember watching that and I was like, shit, that's fucking cool. Like, this is the bad, this is as badass as it gets. And then, you know, finding out that a lot of those guys were wrestlers, I think that also made me want to get into wrestling. But when I went to St. Mary's, we didn't have a wrestling team.
Really?
So I actually, I don't know if I've ever told this on the podcast, but I started the wrestling team at St. Mary's.
Really?
Damn.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was, you know, my freshman and sophomore year. So I knew one of the football coaches. He was the lineman coach. He was like my coach. And he was a wrestling coach at another school. And we always talked about it and about how he always wanted to get a program started. And like, so I started like making the steps to like make that happen. You know, we petitioned, we had fundraisers, we did like all sorts of stuff my freshman and sophomore year. And so by my junior year, we actually had a wrestling room and we had a team and we had two coaches. And so I only wrestled my junior and senior year.
Wow.
But I did off season wrestling stuff my freshman and sophomore year with like all my buddies. Like I said, all my my grade school buddies, they all wrestled, and then they went and did like off season stuff in like the summers and stuff. And so like I did that. So that was like my intro to wrestling. Was that, so I came in to when St. Mary's finally opened up theirs, I had a little bit of experience compared to everybody else.
So you're cleaning house?
Not really. I mean, for a little bit, and then people figure it out. I mean, because it wasn't like I had a ton of experience, you know. It was like a little bit more compared to everybody else. But yeah, I mean, I did all right. I mean, I was never the best one on the team, but I was up there. And it was fun. I loved it. And taught me a ton. So I think it's a great thing for any guy to learn how to do, especially a young kid that, you know, doesn't really know much about themselves or really wants to challenge themselves to do something hard. Cause man, after you wrestle, man, it seems like everything else in life seems easier.
I saw this old footage of the Ultimate Fighter where Chael Sonnen and Vanderlei Silver were talking shit. And like, they start like kind of like getting in stance. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was the most audacious thing that Chael Sonnen shot on him and got him and went amateur. I was like, fuck, dude.
Yeah, Chael can wrestle.
I mean, just the level of confidence it gives you as a person to know that you're going to be able to defend yourself. I mean, especially in today's society where you hear about it all the time with the bullying and stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I always tell my kids, like, if you're never going to be a bully. All right. We don't bully people. And we stand up for people that are being bullied. So,
yeah,
that's another reason why I want to get them into it so they can protect themselves.
100%. And, you know, Rogan will say this all the time that, like, the best thing for bullying is to get them into martial arts. Get bullies into martial arts because, you know, if they're bullying someone, then they probably have something going on. They probably have some sort of something that they're trying to get out. You know, there's something that they're trying to express, whether it's something bad at home or, you know, something like that. And, you know, wrestling is a great outlet. And it's like, it's hard to be a dickhead to everybody when you're that fucking tired, yeah. You know, like, and that's what wrestling will certainly do for you. Definitely. I mean, there's a lot
and the discipline that comes with it.
Yeah. I mean, cause wrestling is all the time, like your weight, you're constantly worried about your weight. You know, you're weighing in 2-3 times a week sometimes. And like I used to get up to like 185 ish for football. And then I cut down to 140 for wrestling.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. I did that. My junior and senior year, I wrestled 140 and 145. And then by the end of the season, I was 140. I think I made 135 once.
Were those just water cuts or were you just dieting down?
Dieting.
Okay.
Dieting.
So it wasn't you were dropping like 20 pounds in a day or anything?
No. Okay. My record's 9 in like 2 hours.
Jeez.
But still. Yeah, it sucked. I think that was when I made 35 as I. And so how wrestling typically works for a lot of teams is you do wrestle offs for the position. So with wrestling, you've got a team. So it's a team mm-hmm. aspect so that you got to, you know, at least I know the weight classes are different, but when I was in high school, it was 103, 112, 119, 125, 135, 140, 145, 152, 170. I want to say it was like 185 next, then like 196, 215 and heavyweight. And so like every guy on the team, like you got, that's your spot. And like, you have to make that weight. Like if you don't make that weight, then your team just doesn't have a wrestler for that spot and you automatically lose.
Yeah.
So like you have this obligation to make the weight. Otherwise you're fucking your team over. And now we don't have a 140er and we have to forfeit that.
And that's a group of guys you don't want mad at you.
Well, yeah, it's that. And you're disappointing your team and your coach. And you bet that fucking wrestling practice the next day is going to be miserable because you didn't make weight, you know? And like, it's something that all the time is something you're worried about. And, it just teaches you so much about yourself, man. You know, like I mean, do a 2 hour practice and then come home and run for an hour and a half because you're 4 pounds over and you are, you know, 5 pounds over and you got to weigh in tomorrow at 3 o'clock, you know? It's like, fuck, dude.
That's tough.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, you can't go and, you know, pig out on Thanksgiving because you're right in the middle of the season. You know? Like, oh yeah. Can't tell you. I mean, I had a couple Thanksgivings where I had, you know, a piece of turkey and like, you know, a little like palm full of mashed potatoes or something, you know, like something light, you know, it's like, you're not, you got to make, especially me. Cause I would do such extreme weight cuts, you know, or I would go from like 180, like I said, right, diet down to like 150s or so, you know, and then it really, but wrestling itself would just get, I mean, you'd lose a lot of the weight from that just cause it's so hard and so cardio intensive. And yeah,
it's a power driven sport. You're moving strong and fast at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, when you think about like doing a clean and jerk or a snatch, like it's the exact same kind of idea. And, you know, if you can only do like 2 or 3 reps out of that, it says that it's going to burn way more calories and take way more out of you than fucking bicep curls.
Right. So. Yeah. But get your kids in wrestling. Yeah. It'll change them in a good way. But yeah, man, should we get into some of these articles here?
Yeah. So this is going to be a real estate episode, where we dive into some articles that are out there, on the interweb, that relate to real estate.
Sweet.
So what do we got first?
So this first one is a Yahoo, article. Millennials are willing to do these 6 things to achieve home ownership. So I kind of flipped through this last night and, I think this is some good stuff because I think it's all pretty true.
Right. So number one, they're going to accept a higher interest rate. So even though we've seen some drops lately, according to this report, 78% of prospective millennial homebuyers would consider accepting a mortgage rate with higher than 7%. 65% would accept a rate up to 10%, and 23% would accept a rate of 15% or more. Now, I don't think we're going to have to worry about seeing 10 or 15%, but 7%. Which is where we're at now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certain programs might have slightly less rates depending on certain things, but that's good because they are projected to come down. So being able to get into a house where rates are a little bit higher, not as much competition, and then refinancing when they do drop, because that's just that many more people coming in to bid up these homes, you know, you're going to be able to refinance and collect on that appreciation instead of having to pay for the appreciation. Right. The payments are going to be right around the same if you take a higher rate for a smaller price versus a lower rate at a higher price. So like I always say, you can find a house that you like for a payment that you're comfortable with. Don't worry about the interest rate because eventually you're going to be able to refinance.
100%.
So
next one, they would be willing to buy a cheaper home. So according to the report, the median U.S. home cost $431,000, but 57% of millennials plan to purchase a home that's cheaper under $400,000. So here in St. Louis, I mean, our average price is like right below $300,000. I would say it's like probably, I mean, if I don't know it off the top of my head, but I would assume it's probably somewhere in that like 280-ish, 270-ish.
I think the last time it was like 290s.
Yeah. So we're right there.
Right. So
right there in that ballpark. So, I mean, you know, here it's a little different just because, I mean, you can, $300,000 buys you a very nice house.
Absolutely.
You know, like it versus, I know a lot of places in the country that's kind of where houses kind of start.
Right.
Or the houses that you want to move into kind of start there. So we're,
And I think, so I'm not a big fan of using national averages.
No.
In terms of sales prices.
Especially when it comes to real estate, because it's right. So market specific.
Yeah, exactly. And every area is different. And Missouri is one of those areas that's different, you know, especially in St. Louis. I mean, that's the thing is like, hell, you could go in certain areas of St. Louis and find, you know, $800,000 to $1 million homes.
100%. Yeah. I'm going to be listing one of them.
Yeah. And then there's other areas where my office is at that you can find a great house from $200,000 to $300,000. That's massive.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of pockets like that in St. Louis. You got certain areas too that are your $300,000 to $500,000. And I think it would be interesting to see like per state, like if we did this in St. St. Louis, like, instead of buying a cheaper home, like, hey, sacrificing location instead of being, you know, in Kirkwood, hey, let's go to Jefferson County, so I'll get Arnold or Imperial or the Jefferson County side of Fenton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so because taxes are cheaper down there, you know, you're seeing them a lot less in that area. And so it make that taxes play into making things affordable. So, and even parts of St. Charles. So I think that would be interesting to see here in St. Louis. If we pose this question to millennials,
mm-hmm.
would they be willing to sacrifice the area that they lived in for a cheaper house?
You know what I think we should do?
And do this?
You know, I think we should put it on our stories as like a thing and like
a poll.
Like a poll.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously that's not like everybody in St. Louis, but you know, I mean, get a good idea from our followers. Good
sample size.
Yeah, good sample size. You know, that'd be kind of fun. I'll do that later this afternoon. Good ideas. Next one. Buy a house sight unseen. Now this one kind of surprised me. That 85% of millennials said they would buy a home sight unseen, even if 1 in 8 millennial homeowners reported regretting a purchasing a home without seeing it first.
Not good odds.
No.
So I mean, I think it all comes back to everybody right now talking about how we're gonna potentially see a repeat of 20 and 2021 as rates start to drop. Now obviously we're not seeing the 2 and 3%. Interest rates, but you know, like I said, I think the new 2 and 3% is going to be 5 and 6%. And during that time now, again, there was so much competition. We were also dealing with COVID. So you only have what, like 15 minutes?
Yeah.
If you like, and you, they only had time slots for so many people.
That shit was so stupid. It, I mean, we weren't really, I mean, there are some agents that were like, ooh, you know, we can't come in because we're in here. You know, yeah. Like most agents were like, all right, we'll stay in this room. You stay in that room.
Right.
Like,
but you still had a line out the door.
Yeah, that's, a lot of times.
That's intimidating. And for so, sure. And you know, I had clients that didn't get in. They just looked at the house by the pictures and weren't seeing it until they did their final walkthrough or inspections.
But again,
there were no inspections at that time. So usually it was final walkthrough that people were finally getting to see the house, which is a scary thing, you know? Sure. So
you're about to go put all this money into this thing and live here for the next X amount of years and just now seeing it. I thought this next part was pretty interesting. So they went on, took it a little bit further. And so some millennials said that they would consider buying a house sight unseen if the following circumstances were present. 38% said a home with a great price point. 34% said if the home was new construction. 34% said if someone that they trusted looked at the home for them. So like I've had a lot of that.
I'll see that a lot.
I've had a lot of that with people moving to St. Louis. You know, they've got a family member, a friend, a somebody here that's I'm going to show houses and we're FaceTiming them through it or whatever.
Right.
That one's definitely, I've had a lot of experience with that one. 27% said that if there was no competition from other home buyers, which I get that, you know, cause that's stressful and it's intimidating, like you said. If the seller was offering concessions or, you know, paid seller closing costs, 24% of people said that they would do it for that. And 21% said their fear of interest rates rising further is what would make them buy a house sight unseen. So yeah, definitely
not something interesting that we recommend, but
no, I mean, I've done it,
yeah, I've helped people that buy them.
Yeah, man. It's people do it. It does happen. So, next one.
I like this one, man.
This is, I mean, my bread and butter, man. Buying fixer uppers. Buy something that, you know, like we close on one on Tuesday. That house, you know, is definitely a little bit of a fixer upper. You know, but she's getting into it for a good price, and she's gonna live there for several years. Fix it up as she lives there, and it's all, you know, minor stuff. You know, I mean, I can get it if you don't want to move into a house that's going to be a total gut rehab, you know, ripping it down to the studs and completely redoing everything like that. That is a, you know, more of a project, but it's a house that you can buy. Like I always say, the live in flips, if you can and you can deal with it and you're okay with, you know, moving into something that's not picture perfect and, you know, a beautiful turnkey, you know, something that you're, it looks like it's out of a magazine. Like, it's okay.
Sweat equity, man.
Sweat equity.
You know? So, I mean,
every house I've ever, I mean, this house right here, I would consider a fixer upper. And, you know, our last house, we fixed it up a lot. And now we're, I mean, it's gone up in value significantly. So, I mean, it's a great, great thing to do.
And to be honest, I think it's a great, now it's crazy that I'm saying this because you just built a new house, but honestly, new construction is a great way and save money by doing things yourself. So like I built my house, closed on the day the world stood still in 2020. We weren't sure if we were even signing paperwork, but we got it done and we closed at 9 a.m. And by 5 p.m., we had the carpets, the flooring, everything ripped out of it. Like all my neighbors were like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm like, well, they wanted 40 grand for hardwood floors and we were able to get what we wanted for 9,000 bucks. Like, yeah, we just saved a shit ton of money right there. Fortunately, they let our granite guy in early because he was licensed and bonded. So they let him come in early and put in the countertops that we wanted, which they were wanting like 15 or 20 grand
to countertops
for the granite countertops from the builder. Yeah. For the size of the island and the counter space that we have
a big kitchen, but dude, that's insane.
And so we were able to get the quartz countertops with the backsplash for the island and everything plus laundry room and pantry for five. Now we were special and got a discount on sure. that stuff, but
got friends.
Yeah, it helps. But yeah, we took that on ourselves and then we had the ability to upgrade the closet in our room and we turned that down and did it ourselves. Saved us a bunch of money there. Same thing with the laundry room and pantry. Laundry room was just bare and the pantry was just wire racks. We went in and customized all of that. And then the built-ins that you see in some of the videos I've shot, mm-hmm. we did those. And then haven't really seen the mudroom, but I mean, you guys have seen it being there, but the locker series, those were all things that we did separate. And they were all wanting, if we wanted to do that stuff, and just crazy amount of money for things like that. So we did all that stuff ourselves for like 40 grand, where it probably would have caught, like we went in and we were like, all right, we're going to do everything. We went in and we maxed out, like, this is everything that we want and priced it out through the builder. And it was stupid expensive.
Sure.
And I mean, we saved probably saved 60 grand by doing it ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a no brainer, man.
Yeah, because I mean, we did all that stuff, got it done pretty quickly. And then a year later in 21, when rates dropped even further, we refinanced and our house increased by 100,000 in a year. So, I mean, can't beat that for a little bit of sweat equity and putting a little bit of our own funds to it versus letting the builder do it. But you can do that on any home, whether it's new construction or like, obviously we did the things that we couldn't do. Like there's no way to update. Take an 8-foot pour to a 9-foot pour in the basement. So we did the 9-foot pour. Obviously the front of the house, it's called the elevation.
Sure.
We chose a slightly more expensive elevation. And then remember how tall the ceilings were. Yep. Instead of it being vaulted, we did volume. Those were the only things that we upgraded. Everything else was
volume when it's all the way up.
Flat across. Flat. Yeah. So 12 foot ceilings on a ranch. So instead of having it come to a point. So yeah, it just makes the space feel that much bigger.
Yeah, so no, it's no brainer, bro. Right here it says 35% of millennials report that they were not confident in undertaking major repairs. Over 2/3 said that they would be willing to purchase a fixer upper. Unfortunately, 18% of millennial homeowners report regretting buying a fixer upper. So 18%, that's
one out of five.
Yeah. And in fact, some millennials were so driven to own a home that they would consider buying a home with the following issues. Smells like cigarette smoke, 74%. No central AC or heating, 68%. Has asbestos, 67%. Has mold, 62%. Has termites, 62%. Has a leaky roof, 60%. Has foundation issues, 58%.
So 1 out of 5 does not recommend getting a fixer-upper, and then 3 out of 5 would do it with any of these ailments, basically.
Yeah.
So... And those 1 of 5 probably actually did a renovation loan, which are a major pain in the ass. The other ones probably did it themselves.
Yeah.
But yeah, renovation loans, they have a purpose, but they're a pain in the ass to deal with. And they take a long time And it's, I've been a part of a couple of them, and all the clients that I talked to were like, we'll never do this again. But now that they're in it, I mean, they love the house that they're in, but like to get to that point, they didn't like it. And that's because, I mean, you're on a time frame of people that had to go through the approval process and all of this, where like, if you get in and you can set it up yourself and do it yourself, or hire your own people that don't need to be vetted, then that's different.
Mm-hmm.
And, but when you're going through the actual loan and the mortgage side of it on a renovation loan, it's way different.
Yep.
So the, I'm going to be honest, that's probably that 18% of the people that probably did like a 203K loan or some shit like that.
I've done one of those and it was not a fun experience.
No.
So haven't done one since.
Right. You do it all yourself now. Well, you hire people, yeah. You buy it, and then you hire out the people that.
Yes.
You want.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I've done a lot of renovations.
Right.
There's not.
But you'll never do a 203K.
Yeah, they were. I personally didn't. It was a client of mine, and it was a difficult thing.
Right.
I mean, just having to get all the special contractors and all the. Yeah, it was a big pain. So.
Well, that and the way they work is like distributions, or you know, they distribute the money, but only after the fact. So you got to get a contractor that's willing to front the money,
right,
to purchase this stuff. And then
which once, most contractors, they want some portion up front,
right,
whether it's half or whatever, right, it is.
And so most won't do it. And the ones that will are backed up because they're probably doing a lot of these.
Sure.
And you know, it just makes things a little bit more difficult.
Cause you got to think of it from their point of view too. It's like, they got to buy all the material,
you know?
So it's like, they got to pay for shit.
You got to keep all their receipts, got to keep everything. And then they have to submit it. And then that's when we'll cut the check to them for that portion. And then they're just getting reimbursed plus some for what they just did. Then they have to go back. And now this is the next phase. Now we're moving on to the next thing, and they're rebuying that stuff. And then, yeah. So.
Damn. Next one is, take drastic measures. So 2/3 of millennials regret not purchasing a home when prices were lower. According to the report, to become a homeowner at this point, however, many said they would resort to drastic measures, which include the following. Getting an extra job, 32%. Moving to a more affordable rural area, 21%. Renting out a room in their home to help with the mortgage, 17%. Skipping some of their debt payments, 16%.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. Starting a GoFundMe, 15%.
Don't do that. God, either.
Come on. GoFundMe to buy a house? Come on, dude. moving to a less safe or developing neighborhood, 14%. Delaying having children, 13%. And delaying the wedding, 10%.
Yeah. I mean, some of those.
Little extreme.
Seriously, don't ever start a GoFundMe page to buy a house. Because all of that is considered a gift. And if you're trying to buy a house and using gift funds, you're having to have a gift letter from every single person that donated to your GoFundMe account. Not a fun process.
Right.
Yeah. Skipping your debt payments, that's a great way to fuck up your credit. And that's going to keep you from buying a house. So make your payments on time. Just keep your debts low. Let's not max out credit cards. Let's keep them at 30% of your credit limit. Let's be smart about using them. Don't buy anything on credit that you can't afford in cash. Like, credit cards are a great way to build wealth. There's with the incentives and things like that. Like, I've had clients that have 3 credit cards. They'll rotate it based on the perks that they're getting that at that time. And they'll use it to get the total benefits for that time. And then they pay it off.
Mm.
Like, there's great ways of doing it.
Yeah, no, 100%.
But ultimately,
credit cards are a great tool. I mean, it's how I...
They're dangerous.
They are dangerous. But like you said, only do things that you could pay in cash. You know, like, I mean, like when we bought this house, I after we closed, I had, you know, we did some renovations to this before we moved in. We pretty much rehabbed the whole downstairs, painted every room upstairs, put a whole new floor in downstairs. And, you know, I mean, it was close to like 15 grand or so, I think, in total, with labor and everything too. So I ended up just putting that. I got a 0% credit card that was 0% for 18 months, and I just put everything on there, and then, you know, paid it off in a couple months, and then, you know, and it was, I don't see anything wrong with that.
No.
You know, I mean, it was 0%, so I was like, I paid it off and like
leverage.
Less, yeah, you had a leverage. So I mean, there's definitely smart ways to do it. So
we've made content about that too.
Yeah, we have.
You know, you were like, and we were like, hey, we're not trying to give you financial advice, but here's something you can do because we've done it.
Right.
Right.
100%. And you know, if you're smart about that, now I wouldn't say, you know, don't take that money out or, you know, take that credit card out, spend everything, and then just like, I don't need to pay that off.
Yeah, you do.
So here's a cool hack with credit cards. So a lot of people don't know this, but you can call the credit card companies and negotiate interest rates.
Really?
So like my Discover card, I've never paid interest on it.
What?
Yeah.
For real?
For real. You can, I call in. So when I first got the card, it was like 18%, 0%, like no interest for 18 months.
Yeah.
And so got the card. And then when the 18 months were over, called them and said, hey, would, you know, I've been a really good client.
I've been a good boy.
Payments on time. Yeah. And so, you know, I'd like to see how, you know, how low can I get my interest rate? Mm-hmm. Well, we're actually got another thing going on right now. We're doing another 12 months, 0% interest. Do you want us to set your card up for that? And I'm like, yep, absolutely. When that 12 months is over, set a reminder like, hey, call Discover. Hey, you know what? Just got done with this program, this promotion that you have going on. I know about my interest rate spark get kicked in, and I'm just curious, anything I can do to get that interest rate lower? Actually, yeah, we got another 0% interest running on right now. So I've done that every time a 0% interest term runs out. Mm-hmm. Call them, say, hey, I want to do this. And that is how you avoid paying interest on a Discover card. Now, not all
cards. Big fan of Discover.
Yeah. Discover's great. I think Discover is one of the best credit cards for someone to get.
First one I ever had.
Some of them, I mean, Chase is not very willing to negotiate.
No.
I was able to get it slightly less than what it was, but
Chase and Amex are probably going to fight you on that.
Yeah.
Because it seems like designer credit cards.
Yeah. Southwest, same way. A lot of those, but Discover's good about that.
Capital One might be able to play with them.
But I don't have a Capital One, so I don't know how that works. I've got Chase and Discover.
I got Chase. I actually got a lot of different credit cards. I'm kind of an enthusiast about trying to use credit cards for as much as possible, but my gold card from Amex, I mean, you got to pay $250 just to even hold the damn thing.
Yeah.
But then when you look at all the credits they give you and all the benefits that come with it, it's like, that $250 gets paid back real quick.
If you're good about a budget and debts and paying off credit cards, mm-hmm. Amex is one of the best that you could get.
Yeah.
For its perks.
I have 3 Amex credit cards.
Yeah.
I have 1 Chase.
Yeah. I've got Discover and Chase.
My first Chase card though has had the highest individual credit limit until I got my Capital One Venture X.
Yeah.
They gave me $20,000 right off.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So, and then, yeah, another trick too is go in and try and get your credit limit raised every 12 months. Right. Just to kind of boost that up, give you a little bit more spending power. That's a trick that I use with clients that might have a credit card that's maxed out with a low limit, and say, hey, you know, you can either pay this down to this amount or try and see if you can get your credit limit raised to this amount.
With Discover, you can do that through their app.
Yep. And most of them you can. Most of the time you can just go through the app and say, hey, I'm trying to apply for a credit limit raise.
Yeah.
Ask you a couple questions. You fill it out. It's great. And it's like I said, you know, a lot of people, like the problem is like Best Buy does this. And I talk to clients all the time. It pisses me off. And I went through it with my ex-wife when we were setting something up for her. But what Best Buy will do, when you go in, so like I bought a computer. Luckily my mom had been in the business. She told me exactly what I needed to do. Computer was gonna be like $1,000. And when I went in, I applied for the credit, do the credit card, 0% interest. But what they do is they set the credit limit for what it is that you're buying. I said, no, we're not doing that. I said, I want my credit limit to be the max that I can get. And they're like, well, why? I said, I'm not going to use it, but these people don't know what the fuck's going on with credit.
Right.
They're just
sales. I want to max out my whole card with
right.
you.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, so, and that's what happens is people don't realize it. And same thing with like Home Depot or Lowe's or things like that. They're going to set the limit up for what it is that you're buying.
Mm.
And so you automatically open a credit card that's maxed out, fucked your credit up. Not you're opening a new line of credit. There's a ding. Maxed out. There's an even bigger ding. So when you apply for these department store credit cards or special credit cards through stuff like that, make sure you're getting your credit limit set up for the max that you would qualify for. And so, like, I mean, we used it as a negotiating tactic with Best Buy. Forget what we were trying to buy. It was like a washer and dryer.
Zach, wait to start responding because I have to switch out your battery.
It was a washer and dryer, and they were only going to give her, they were going to give it her the credit limit for what we were buying it for. And I said, no, that's not going to work. Max out what she can qualify for. With what we're spending, we need her credit limit to be this. And so they went in and looked and like, well, the max that we can give is this. I said, well, then we're not buying this here. I was like, we either figure out a way to get a discount on these, this washer and dryer, which let's figure that out.
Right.
Or you increase your credit limit up to this. So we kind of split the difference. So we're able to kind of get a smaller discount, small discount. Plus we were able to get her maxed out to, I want to say it was like 10 grand.
Money.
So we were able to get a washer and dryer at a slight discount because we knew how to communicate with them and talk to them about this, and they wanted the sale. So,
all right. Next one. So, wait until they've saved a 20% down payment. Oh, this is something you can dig right into, buddy. Saving for a substantial down payment can take time, especially if you do not have a good head start. According to the report, 25% of millennials have less than $10,000 in savings, 12% have less than $1,000 saved, 5% have nothing in savings. That's crazy, man. I mean, a couple years ago, that was me. You know, yeah. That was me before I got into real estate and all this stuff. I mean, I spent every dollar I made, every paycheck, every time I walked home with a big old wad of cash from the tips, it was getting spent for the most part. So I get it.
You don't need 20% to buy a house. Obviously, 20% helps get you to get rid of PMI, but PMI is so cheap that honestly, it doesn't really matter. Plus, I always look at it as your return on your investment. So your home's going to appreciate it the same amount no matter what, whether you put 20% down or 3% down or some program 0% down. So if you can leverage low money down and get to a payment that you're comfortable with, do it. Because then you have, and if you have have tried to save for 20%, now you've got money in reserves and you're going to sit with a cushion. But you don't need 20% to buy a house.
This isn't
Dave Ramsey.
Dickens did a really good video on this a while back about the difference in difference in payment on buying the same house, whether you put 20% down or 5%, which in my experience, I feel like that's what most people put down. You know, is that pretty accurate in your experience? Most people put 5?
Yeah.
If you're doing conventional,
I think I always, at the end of the year, always put in an Excel spreadsheet, sales price and loan amount for all the deals that I've done.
Yeah.
And usually the average down payment of all the deals, like say 85 last year. So of all those deals, I think the average down payment was about 7%. Yeah. So, a lot of first time home buyers are taking advantage of these low 3%, 3.5% down programs. Plus they come with a lot of incentives. Right. So, you know, grants, stuff like that. And your monthly payment really it's not that big of a difference for what it is that you're saving versus, you know, what you're putting down.
Right. So we look at talking a couple $100,
If you want to talk about break evens, like what you could do with that money elsewhere, like you could, for what it is you're saving, you take the difference per month, divide it by how much more you're having to put into it. And that's going to essentially give you a break even number. And you could take that money and invest it. As long as you're making, you feel like you can make more on that money than what you're putting into the house and saving per month, then you should put it elsewhere. Again, I'm not a financial advisor, but there are a lot of good financial avenues other than putting in your house. Because once it's in your house, it's a pain in the ass to get out. Home equity line of credit, home equity loan, cash out refinance, or you're selling it. So especially in a time like now where we're heading, other people want to say this or not, but I think we're in a recession, if not heading or very close to one. Now's the time you want to keep your money.
Yeah.
You know, case of emergency, because once it's there, it's there. So yeah, I don't think saving for 20% is just going to continue to push like this. Right? This is, you know, the very first one was, it's all things that they're willing to do by now. But if you don't have the money saved, you're just delaying what it is that you're going to, when you're buying it. So take advantage of being able to get into a house with a little down payment and, you know, see what happens.
Save like you want to put 20% down, but only put 5%. And now you got that extra, cash. And, you know, then you can use that to put in the house or to invest it in other things. So,
yeah. My favorite thing is to talk to people, like, especially people that maybe living at home or don't have a monthly rent payment. Because one of the questions I like to ask is, you know, what is it that you're comfortable with paying per month? And a lot of people have an idea. Most don't. But I always tell them, like, all right, here's what we're going to do. You live at home with your parents. So you're telling me that you think you can afford $1,500 a month. On the first of every month, I want you to open up a savings account. On the first of every month, I want you to take $1,500 and put it straight into that account. Then go from there and see how it feels living off the remaining part of your paychecks for the rest of the month. And if you're like, oh, that's easy, then and you're like, maybe I can do more, then the next month try $1,800 and do that for a couple months before you start to buy. Not only are you getting a feel for what that mortgage payment feels like, but
you've got a nice little cushion.
You've got a savings account that you've started to build every month to help you determine the monthly payment that you want.
Yeah.
So
brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant, man. Well, yeah, it was a pretty good article. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, here's just got a, just it kind of goes into ways that millennials can save for a large down payment. But yeah. I think what you just said kind of covers most of it. So let's get into some James Clear, a good 3-2-1. So reminder, this is James Clear, author of Atomic Habits. He sends out this weekly newsletter that I really like. So it's 3 ideas from me, 2 quotes from others, and 1 question for you. So 3 things for me, or 3 ideas from me, or from James. You can go to hell without moving an inch. Just focus on what you lack. You can taste heaven without leaving earth. Just rejoice in what you have.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I like that.
I mean, it kind of goes into the book that we're reading right now, Think and Grow Rich. I mean, it's all about your thoughts and the power of positive thinking. And, you know, we touched on it with our last guest, Anthony, where we're talking about it's about how you think.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we started the episode. Your abundance mentality. Like, you could have let that destroy you, but you didn't because, you know, hey, I'm all right.
Right.
So
more deals coming in. I got more things in my life. I got so many good things going on in my life right now that, like, can't let something like that bother me. If I let something like that bother me, I got bigger fish to fry, you know, like it's all good.
Oh yeah.
Next one, simplest way to clarify your thinking is to write a full page about whatever you're dealing with and then delete everything except the 1 or 2 sentences that explain it the best. I like that.
Yeah.
I've never done that, but.
So I kind of do this with emails. I get something. Yeah. So if I get an email that, or somebody sends me a text or something like that, that's like trying to, you know, stir the pot, or like, I'll type out what I really want to say and then I'll delete it. Like I said, I'll keep the points. I'll look at it and be like, all right, these couple sentences make my point, but I'll delete the rest. And so it allows me, and I just sit there. And then I just let it go. And then it gives me time to calm down and relax from whatever it was. And then I'll come back to it and look at the sentences that I do have and then expand on it from there after I've cleared my mind and head and thoughts and all that. But yeah, there's been some situations like, I don't know, losing a deal or like you did. I mean, especially like another loan officer taking a client. With being in the same company, like, we don't step on each other's toes, and there's processes in place that don't allow that, and then kind of being an asshole about it after I send them an email like, hey,
right,
you know, this is where I'm at, this is what I'm thinking, and then coming back just with a real asshole response. I had a very nice email typed up that I would have loved to said, and ended up deleting a couple paragraphs from it, and there's a couple things from it, and then just sat on it for 24 hours. And the next thing you know, I had 2 other people that were on the email fight the battle for me. So I didn't even have to do anything.
Send it.
Yeah. So, but no, that's awesome. I think
good
it's
stuff.
Great.
I like that. I've never done that really, I don't think. So maybe I'll try that next time. There's something that's bugging me. The reason people get good ideas in the shower is because it's the only time during the day when most people are away from screens long enough to think clearly. The lesson is to not take more showers, but to make more time to think. This is good.
Yeah.
I like that. you know, I think we could all do more of this. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, here's the thing. And I've always said, like, you know, if you're worried about your screen time, it's the wrong industry to be in.
Right.
At least our industries. But, you know, there are times where I do try to shut it off. And, you know, I've been trying to not look at my phone first thing in the morning. Like, I need to be better about that. And like just rolling out of bed and not scrolling for like 10 minutes. Like, I have this bad habit of waking up, grabbing my phone, and then just like mindlessly scrolling for 5 to 10 minutes because I don't want to get out of bed yet. And I feel like I need to stop doing that and just like get my feet on the carpet, start moving, go downstairs, get my pages in. That's usually what I do first thing.
Yeah.
And I just need to, I think more of that would be good, but, you know, spending less time on screens, more time just actually sitting down and talking to people. I know we've talked about it before, but that's what I love about one of my favorite things about this and is just a time where we can, you know, phones off. We're not, you know, I'm sure both of us have text messages and missed calls and stuff right now that we'll get to after this, but it's a time where I can just sit across the table from one of my good friends and we can sit here and just bullshit and talk. And, you know, we have guests here, we have Murphy, you know, and Murph's here too. I'm not Murph, obviously. So
thanks for not forgetting about me.
I know. Well, it is the Zach and Pat show. No, I'm just kidding, Murph. You're obviously a huge part of the show, bro.
I'm literally over here on my phone.
Talking about
you should be doing some thinking. Right,
yeah,
now.
You should be thinking and coming up with good ideas.
But for me, like with that, like, and this, that's the one thing I loved about running when I ran, you know, and it's one of the things like maybe I should get back into running. But I take long walks now to compensate for that. But yeah, that's usually when I'm doing my best thinking is when I'm on a walk or going, like when I was running. But yeah, just a way doing something basically on your own, alone, giving yourself alone time.
Yeah.
To think about things.
Yeah. Like I think of stuff in the car a lot when I'm driving, you know, and I'm always like pulling out my phone and like putting shit in my notes app or I'm like doing a voice note to myself because something I'll think of, like maybe something I want to bring up on here, or oh, I forgot I got to do that for her, and oh, I got to make that call, I got to call him. You know, it's like I'm constantly always when I'm driving, I'm always like adding shit to my. I have a note in my phone that's just called. It's called the never ending list.
Yeah, I've done that too. And then you know, I'm like, I'm driving, I'm like, wait, I'm home. How the fuck did I get home?
Oh, all the time, dude. I was thinking about that last night on my way home from the gym, and I was like, man, I wonder how many times I've made that drive home from Watson's that like I just don't
deep in thought.
Yeah,
just, and I. You're on cruise control.
Cruise control. Like, yeah, it was one of those nights last night. I'm like thinking about all the shit that happened that, you know, in the gym that night.
Did I put my blinker on when I made that turn? Did I cut anybody off? Was there cars coming when I made that left turn?
Right. I have no idea.
Fire those flashing lights behind me.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's good shit. But all right. Next one. Two quotes from others. Poet and art critic Charles Baudelaire explains how great ideas arise. Inspiration is merely the reward for working every day. Yeah, I mean, I think basically what that means is like, you know, just do the work and inspiration is going to come.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's not a, it's just, there's a book, what's it called? The War of Art. You ever read that?
Stephen Pressfield.
Yeah, Stephen Pressfield. So in there, he talks about, refers the resistance and I think he calls it the muse. And if you treat the muse like she's real, like you get out there and you do what you're supposed to do every day. So like if you're a writer and you want to sit and you make this goal, I'm going to write 1,000 words every day or whatever it is. And you get out there and you sit down on your computer, you write those 1,000 words every day. Like you do that shit every day and you summon the muse, like good shit is going to come. And I'm like, I'm a believer in that, man. Like in making my calls and doing all the stuff that I need to do for, you know, I always refer to it as like call karma, but like making my calls and just good things tend to happen. Even if nothing produced themselves from those calls, I'll have a social media post that'll do really well. I'll get a lot of engagement and maybe a new client or new person reach out to me from that or something like that. But if I'm just doing the shit that I know I need to do, good shit tends to happen.
Yeah. It's like creating your own luck.
Yeah.
Big piece from that book is just working effectively too. Because Stephen Pressfield will be like, hey, there'll be days I really don't feel like writing. I'll write one page and I'm done.
Yeah.
Because that's all I had the attention span to do that day and I go live my day.
Right. But he showed up.
That's that 1% butter that James Clear talks about.
Exactly. Next, a tiny poem from Emily Dickinson written on the back of an envelope. In this short life that only lasts an hour, how much, how little is within our power? Very little.
Very little.
You know.
A lot of shit out of our control. Control the controllables.
Control the controllables. Love that. And last one, one question for you. When have I felt the most joyful this year? And what steps can I take to recreate those conditions?
I was just thinking about this yesterday, actually. It was awesome. I was outside playing soccer in the front yard with both the boys. No phone, no nothing, just the three of us. And it's a beautiful day. And we're just rolling around in the front yard, playing in the grass, getting dirty, kicking the soccer ball around, having fun. And I was like, yeah, this is perfect. How do I
recreate this?
Keep doing this every single day.
And yeah, we had a really good, we're only a couple months into this year, but I mean, one that comes right off the top of my head is we went, you know, we had a pretty slow Sunday. I think it was last Sunday, and it was a beautiful day. We ended up going, we were like, oh, let's take Calvin to the zoo in the morning. I got nothing going on. Like, let's wake up early and be kind of like the first ones to show up at the zoo, because we knew it was going to be a beautiful day. The zoo here in St. Louis is free, so on beautiful days, it tends to get really packed. So we're like, all right, let's show up like right as it's opening up, get in there, get out, get our, couple hours in, and then we'll take him home for a nap. And we showed up, and like me and Gina, so Gina's some of our best friends also had a kid like right at the same time. I think he's like 4 months older than Calvin. And we're walking into the park, and then they like walk, we're like waiting for the train, and all of a sudden they walk up right behind us, and we ended up hanging out with them the whole day. And, from there went home, got good. We had a great lunch. And then from there we went and took Calvin out to the park after he woke up from his nap. And it was just like a fucking perfect day. And, I was thinking about that the other day about like, what a great, like fun, like family, like I got to see my friends. Like it was just a great,
filled your cup.
Yeah, filled my cup. And
it has nothing to do with work.
Nothing. Yeah. And that was because it's rare that, on a Saturday or Sunday that I just don't have anything going on.
Yeah.
Which is nice. So whenever that does happen, I definitely take advantage of it. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it for James Clear today. So I think that's a good spot for us to cut it off today. And so if anybody got anything out of the show, you enjoyed it, tell a friend, share the show. Huge thanks to NeuroGum, and we will see you guys on Thursday with a guest episode. We'll be right back.